Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. In this podcast, Vince Menzione, a proven industry sales and partner executive, brings together technology leaders in this forum to discuss transformational trends and to deconstruct successful strategies to thrive and survive in the rapid age of cloud transformation. And now your host, Vince Menzione.
Welcome to The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. This is a special 17th episode of the podcast that I'm releasing on the 17th day of the month. I'm very excited. My guest for this 17th episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering is Andrea McGonigal. Andrea serves as Microsoft's Managing Director for the Health and Life Sciences business. And I've known Andrea much of my career when I was at Microsoft. And then when healthcare became part of the public sector business, we interacted more closely. I was awakened to the great opportunities in healthcare and the amazing impact that this organization can have in driving outcomes and how technology and disruptive technology play such a vital role here. We had an episode earlier this year with Bill Hawkins, and we thought we'd do a deeper dive. There was so much resounding feedback that healthcare was such an important topic for partners and for Microsoft that we chose to do this second episode, or what I call Healthcare 2.0. Andrea also has an amazing personal and professional journey that we hope to peel back on in this episode, and I hope you enjoy listening to Andrea's story. Thank you for joining The Ultimate Guide to Partnering. Andrea, welcome to the podcast. I am so happy to have you here today. Healthcare is such an important topic in technology and in society today. We did a podcast on healthcare earlier this year and had resounding success and asked for more information. So I'm so glad to have you join us.
Great. Thank you, Vince. I'm really happy to be here and really talk about my passion, which is healthcare, and happy to share it with your audience.
Thank you so much. And you and I have known each other for several years. We worked together at Microsoft and got to know each other and work closely together in the healthcare business. Can you explain to our listeners in simple terms what you do at Microsoft?
Sure. So I am the managing director of the health and life science team, and I focus on partner and business development. And really the easiest way to explain it is I look at the issues that the industry is facing, and I say, what are ways that we can come together to help solve some of these problems so that we can make healthcare, you know, more accessible, more affordable, higher quality across the board, and just improve healthcare from that perspective with the use of technology. I do that really all through partners.
And you do that across the entire Microsoft business, I understand. Is that correct?
From healthcare perspective, yeah. So if we look at health, so we look at plans, payers, providers, which are hospitals and hospital systems, life sciences, as well as a little bit of health and human services in there as well. So it's all the kind of sub-verticals of health. And we look at health holistically. And we purposely chose to do it that way because we felt like rather than look at it from a sub-vertical standpoint in each of those verticals, we're looking at the problem all up and saying, how can we bring some of those entities together and have solutions that go across that continuum?
And are you seeing the lines blurring between those three disciplines? You know, life sciences, which is, you know, I think of as pharmaceutical, the payers, yeah, which are the blues, as many people refer to them, and of course, the providers, the hospital systems and the like. What's happening across those lines?
Absolutely. The lines are definitely getting blurred because if you look at the healthcare problem across the board, number one, the amount of money that we spend in healthcare and the rise of healthcare costs are growing higher than GDP for this nation. We have to look at healthcare across the continuum to really drive our costs down, to really have higher quality care, and in turn for the patients to receive better engagement and better healthcare, obviously. You see a ton of partnerships across these sub verticals. And you see people who have never been in this space before jumping in. So you think of someone like Walmart, for example. How do they deliver and drive their healthcare costs down? So if you think about it, I love to say this, but it's the truth. Healthcare is everybody's business. Everyone understands it because you are a patient at one point or a consumer of healthcare as someone who's well and currently not at the doctor's. So I know what I want when I go to the doctors, and so does everyone who has any type of healthcare issues or wellness issues, and they say what they want from their service, from a doctor, or from the healthcare ecosystem. And it's just not where we want it to be today.
So how is Microsoft involved? What's Microsoft's value proposition here that's unique to both customers and partners? Can you take our listeners through that?
Sure. So I talked about healthcare across the board. And we do have some experts from healthcare on our team. But the reality of it is we focus and spend billions of dollars on our technology from a research and development standpoint, making sure we have the best of breed solutions. And obviously from a cloud perspective, really building out the cloud and data centers at a level that is global, scalable. So we spend billions of dollars. And you think about some of the top companies, like pharmaceutical companies and what they spend billions of dollars researching drugs. We do the same thing, researching and building the best products that we have. And from that healthcare perspective, there are experts in health, obviously, throughout the nation. What we believe is we have a platform that they can build their solutions on. So they take their specialization from a healthcare perspective. They can build it on top of our cloud and platform. And they can, and that's probably gets them about 80% of the way there from a solution standpoint. And then their specialization is probably about 20% of it. And they can build it on our platform and offer global solutions that are scalable and secure to anyone in healthcare. We also, why Microsoft, I believe, is positioned very well from a healthcare perspective is we're one of the few companies that understand from consumer all the way through to enterprise. We've also spent the last couple of years really focused on consumer. And you see products like Surface. We have a solution, Health Vault, that's available on every device. You see our philosophy has changed around our products from Office to Link. And Skype, they're available on every single platform now, from no matter what device you're carrying. So we're really focused more on being the premier cloud provider from a healthcare perspective and connecting people, as I said, from that consumer all the way through to the enterprise, which I believe, if you think about the healthcare discussion that we started with, and we talked about some of the silos in healthcare, that's what we really need to break it down and bring it to the next level.
So you mentioned partners being integral to what you do every day, and Microsoft has a platform. So what, where do you look for partners to insert themselves here in the healthcare value proposition?
So from a partner perspective, we're really looking at a couple of key areas within healthcare. I mentioned, you know, one of the jobs that I do is I look at the issues the industry's facing, and I say, how can we help there? And I think categorize them into a couple categories. The first one being analytics from both the clinical and operational standpoint, care coordination, patient engagement, and really anything around personalized medicine. And in those categories, we believe our platform from a roadmap perspective, whether it's Azure, IoT, Skype, analytics, machine learning, that we can use those building blocks and foundations and work with partners to bring world-class solutions together to the market for healthcare.
You mentioned personalized medicine. Again, for our listeners who are new to the topic of healthcare, can you explain to them what that means?
Sure. From a personalized medicine standpoint, today, when you go to the doctor, and you get a diagnosis, and I'll actually walk through this example that I like to use specifically around prostate cancer. So I'm living in Kansas, and I go to the doctor and find out that I have prostate cancer. That doctor may have seen hundreds of patients who had prostate cancer, and they give me a diagnosis and a path forward. What if I could get the information from the top hospitals across the nation, and we had all the data based on anyone who ever had prostate cancer? And there are thousands, millions of people in that database, and we can run analytics on that database to say, okay, someone who has a PSA level of this, someone who is at this stage, this is probably what their best path forward should be. Using that data, taking all of those things that surround you as inputs, and then coming up with what is your best or personalized path forward is the easiest way for me to explain personalized medicine.
It's a really great example. I know several people that have been touched by prostate cancer, and depending on the access to the right doctors and the right procedures, their care situation was different from person to person.
Absolutely. If you think about top doctors in the nation, and, you know, it was someone that they only have 8 slots in the day, right? If they have 8 hours, they have 8 visits times 5 days, they can only see X number of people. This allows us to use their knowledge, use the data and their algorithms to help serve somebody who's thousands of miles away and give them a better outcome, hopefully.
So are there specific use cases that you can point to, customer examples from personalized medicine?
So one of the inputs specifically around personalized medicine can be genomics, which is a really exciting area for us at Microsoft. What that's about is sequencing your DNA. And why that's important, in particular, we see a lot of children's hospitals are very interested in it, is it helps to figure out what are the variations in your genome and how you respond to medicine. Think about that. If you have your genome sequence, can we be at a place where when there's a decision to make around what type of drugs you have to take or you could take for a problem, that they could tell you which one would be a better fit for you before you even take the drug based on your genome? I know in the cases of children's hospitals, when children are born and there's some health issues and they're trying to get to the bottom of what the issues are, it can sometimes take weeks and sometimes it's life or death, right? They try a few things and it's very hard to put newborn infants through some of those tests. Mm. What they're doing now is sequencing their genome. Think about what it could mean to clinical trials if they would know based on people's genomes how they could or would respond to different medicines. It's very exciting. Internally, a lot of our customers have this service, but it's built in-house. They really do not have the technical expertise. We currently are working with partners. One of the partners are called DNA Nexus, who have offerings that are built on Azure, our cloud today, and are offering the service. We're currently working on a few case studies, which will be coming public soon. And we're looking for additional partners in this space.
So is there an opportunity here to then, once you have the genome data, and then you apply some type of approach to solving the issue, is there then the ability to say, if this works once, it should work again in another instance like this with the same genome sequencing?
Absolutely. So it's the whole idea of cohorts, right? You could be put in a group with every, you know, people who look very similar to you, and you could say people who are in this cohort, A, B, C, look like this. These are their outcomes and this is how it works. So it goes back to the personalized medicine play, which is when you see a lot more of the same type of characteristics, you're able to predict more and get more precise around those predictions.
It's amazing and exciting.
It is.
Let's talk a little bit about virtual health, if you don't mind. That's been a topic that's been coming up quite a bit. Telemedicine is another term for it. Can you take our listeners through what virtual health is and what Microsoft is doing to solve in that area?
Virtual health, the easiest way to explain that is to receive any type of care through technology. And that could be from texting right through to video. And it could be either on the back end, either a nurse or doctor. And really, today's world, as I mentioned earlier, we as consumers are used to being online. There's always, you know, someone that you can chat with online and say, hey, my order didn't come in. I'd love to check the status. They check it, they get back to you, and you never picked up the phone. If you think about having being sick yourself in the middle of the night, as we know, the doctors are more than likely asleep or they have the office from 8 to 5. What if your child gets sick in the middle of the night? What if you don't feel good in the middle of the night? Going to the emergency room is very expensive. When I look at one of the key things about a healthcare system is the cost. What's happening with the cost are people are busting out of the system, meaning something like an earache. You would be in terrible pain in the middle of the night. If you had someone that you could visit virtually, how could that help you and resolve the problem in X amount of minutes without that visit? And at the same time, you get better quality care. You get better outcomes. They could write you the script. They could actually look in your ear and say whether or not there was a problem. Same things with rashes. So there's certain tier one issues that can be solved right now over virtual care, which we see a lot of people picking up and doing. And we're working with partners like MD Live, who are building on our technology, specifically our cloud technology, Azure, to help build out those services. And they're offered to all companies, so not just healthcare companies. This is a great benefit that people are looking for. So if you think about when you work for a company, hey, if I can call a doctor in the middle of the night virtually and get them on the phone and ask them a couple of questions, that's a big bonus for me.
So for a company like MD Live, do they employ doctors around the globe? Is that how they solve for it? Or
yes, they employ doctors. They have they offer the services. So if a company wants to host the service, they basically allow them to.
So virtual health, personalized medicine, what are other important goals or focus for you and the team this year?
That's a good question. I think definitely care coordination is the other one. I touched on this a little bit when I talked about Microsoft being the only technology player that I believe goes truly from consumer to enterprise. And care coordination is a great example. How do I, as a patient, as a consumer of health, manage me as a patient or even my child, my parents through the process? And if you think about it, and let's talk about someone who has a chronic condition like diabetes, how do I manage that on a day-to-day basis? Whether it's from my device, then I go to my doctor, and how do I get them my information? In the past, what would happen is you would actually take your blood sugar number every single day. You write it down on a piece of paper. What time did you do it? What did you have to eat that day? Today, people are tracking that all through apps.
Yep.
And then when they go to visit their doctor, it's all uploaded in the cloud, in the back end. And the doctor can see and find some of the issues and say, okay, I can see where there's inconsistencies here. But more important is, where is the workflow after? Say it's the middle of the day and the sugars drop. In some cases, the diabetics are carrying a device that can tell when the sugar is dropped and can alert where they say, take these actions in the future and advise them. So it's really taking that complete workflow. And in that case, you're going right from the consumer, as I said, the person managing diabetes on a day-to-day basis through the provider system. And, you know, God forbid, but let's say in the middle of the night, they went into diabetic shock. They go to the hospital and they're on vacation. When they're in a completely different healthcare system, all that information could still be available to them. That's care coordination. It's across the continuum. And as I said, that I believe that's a space with Microsoft, with our current technologies, I think are very well positioned to do well in this space, and a space that I think we can continue to grow. And I think one of the areas and new technologies that we're currently working on is health bots. And this is a great one for health bots, right?
Yeah. So what is a health bot for our listeners?
Sure. So a bot, if you think about it, I did refer to this instance, this example earlier, but if you're on a website and you're looking at an item and did you ever notice it pops up and says, hey, can we help you with anything? Right. It notices how long it's actually electronic assistant on the website. It's the same idea. It's using analytics and technology, but I call it health because obviously I'm focused on health. So think about it from all the things we talked about from a virtual assistant standpoint. What if you went to the website, either your provider's website, a healthcare website, and it popped up and said, is there something that I can help you with? How can we use health bots to enable some of these technologies like virtual health, care coordination, patient engagement to a new level that wouldn't require a doctor and nurse on the other end? They're reading all the data, the analytics that we have, and helping you solve or at least point you in the right direction and cutting that time from your search. A good example that I've seen with this is specifically with kids. It's good for kids from an education standpoint when you think about when you're in the hospital and you get a diagnosis around a chronic condition or a disease. Your mind is working overtime about what this means. The health bot can be set up to teach you about the a very interactive, teach you about the disease state, how to take care of yourself, et cetera. That's just one example from an education standpoint. But that's one of the areas that I'm looking to expand on. How do we use health bots to take them to the next level around that virtual care? Another area is obviously from a virtual standpoint, the HoloLens. You know, how do we use that technology? Today, we're using it in education. We're changing the way that surgeons are trained, meaning that in the past, if you think about a surgeon and how they use different devices, previously, they would have cadavers and they would bring them in. Now they can put on a HoloLens device on their head and virtually do the surgery as some testing and education. So that's one way we're using it. What are other ways that we can use it to solve some of these problems, as I said, around care coordination, patient engagement, as well as analytics and personalized medicine? So looking at that latest technology that's kind of a little bit ahead of the curve and thinking about what are healthcare scenarios and how we can use them.
So you touched on wearables with the diabetes example. Where do you see that whole market going? You know, Microsoft had a band. There's the Apple Watch. Fitbit is getting into play. I just saw an article where Fitbit is starting to focus on sleep apnea. Where do you see that whole market evolving? Are there more specialized devices coming on the market as well?
Yes, that's a great question. From a device standpoint, there's always going to be devices bigger and better. I think that's going to be constant. Just as the phones have been in the past, there's going to end up being billions of devices, devices in your home that are also monitoring your health, no longer just, you know, just the device that you carry on you. And I think that will absolutely continue to grow. Where from a Microsoft standpoint, what's most important to us is where we believe we bring the most value is the cloud on the back end. That is the most important piece, right? How you collect the data and what data you collect will be determined by those devices. But what you do with that data once you have it, that's where the true value is. And hence the reason why we're focused on personalized medicine, analytics, machine learning, and running algorithms on the cloud with that data to really gain insight where you can have actions that change the outcomes of your health.
So we've touched on partners a little bit and you've given us a couple of examples, but what characteristics do you believe make a great healthcare partner?
That's a good question. I think first and foremost, the most important thing is that you understand the healthcare business. Partners, from our perspective, need to have relationships in our current customers with the head of the company, whether it be SC, CXO, top BDMs who are the business decision makers in that company. In a lot of these cases, they need to have those relationships already and they need to speak their language. And when they do, I find we get great results. And I'll give you a good example. When we use specific business problems and address them, like, let me tell you about how we got our patient opt-out rate to less 2%. We have hundreds of people who are interested. So getting very specific and knowing the pain points, how you address them, and who are your constituents within the companies that are your potential customers, I think are very important. So that's the first thing, being an industry expert and knowing how to speak that language. The second thing is, I think, knowing your capabilities, meaning, so I think knowing what you can handle, knowing when to say yes and no to what some of the requests are, because what's very important is that people can rely on you to execute. I think where our philosophy is a little bit different than our competitors. Our competitors tend to put out press releases about who signed agreements with them, who signed agreements with their partners. At Microsoft, we like the stories of full implementation and return on investment to tell the story for us after the solution is implemented and we see the outcomes. So we're very focused on what those outcomes are and showing those successes.
So that's great insight. What about a partner that wasn't successful working with Microsoft? Is there something that you would tell them now if you could?
Yeah, I think number one, I mentioned this, but just saying no if you can't take on the ask, right? As yep. I said, tell us that you can't take it on and why. Because again, the end result must be a implemented solution that has a return on investment for our customers that we can all talk about and tell it to success together. I think that's one. I think the other one is just consistency around follow-up and communications. It's very, very hard. Okay, everyone gets thousands of emails, I understand. But follow-up and communications are very important. Customers, we believe, look at partners as an extension of our company. So we really want that communication and follow-up to be there as well.
So is there one thing that isn't taught, but you believe to be true in successfully partnering with Microsoft?
That's a good question. Don't be afraid to say no.
Don't be afraid to say no. And to me, a lot of that is around capacity and transparency with the working partner, right? It's like it's transparency about capacity. It's just the two-way dialogue and expectation setting that's associated with that.
Yeah, especially when a partner's doing really well, you're seeing a lot of success. You know, everyone at Microsoft tends to jump on that horse and say, oh, and you can do this and you can do that, you know, and we'll help you here. And you just have to have the ability to say no.
So any other advice you have for partners that are looking to engage with you and your team?
Sure. I would say, obviously, we'd love to sit down and talk to different partners. I think the partners that I have the most successful first meet with come prepared to talk about their solution, the pain points that it's solving, how they're different from their competitors, and how what Microsoft technology they're looking at to take them to the next level and disrupt or change that game with their competitors.
And your team is focused on scorecard metrics, revenue share, all of those things, right? So would be probably good advice for those partners as well to be able to understand your alignment and your priorities.
We are very focused on the cloud. And our goal is not to just sell the cloud, but to make sure that it's part of every mission critical system that healthcare is using.
So as you might know from listening to other episodes, I'm fascinated by how people got to this particular spot in life. And I wanted to focus some of our conversation on your personal and professional journey, because I think it's a great story, and how you got started and how you got to where you are as a senior director or leader, managing director at Microsoft. And I thought maybe you could take our listeners through it, because you came out of the healthcare space, right? The pharmaceutical industry, and then joined the technology giant. So could you just start for how you got started, Andrea, and
sure.
Tell our listeners? Thank you.
Sure. So I'll kind of start at the beginning. I started on the technology side. So I attended Drexel University and got a degree in business with a focus in MIS. From the time I was in high school, I worked in this office and they first got computers. I was the file clerk. I was supposed to be filing papers all day. And I would jump on the computers and help them and try and figure them out. And by the end, I was teaching them all how to use them. So I knew I had a definite interest in technology. I went to Drexel, focused on that. And I focused on their five-year program, which was a co-op program, which allowed you to go out and work at different companies. I worked at DuPont Chemicals, but my last company that I worked for was U.S. Healthcare, which is now Aetna Healthcare. It is a big payer in the Philadelphia area. And from there, really started getting into healthcare and learning the different parts of the business from a payer perspective. I was there about 2 years, and one of my coworkers left to go to Merck, which is a big pharmaceutical company, and started talking about, hey, what great experience he was getting there. And I went over to Merck, spent 11 years in the pharmaceutical industry. In the pharmaceutical industry, I did various jobs that were technically focused, which eventually moved me into the business. I did project management roles there. And there are four parts to a pharmaceutical industry business. It's the services that they provide, but it's marketing, manufacturing, and research. And I basically took different roles in all of those verticals to learn about the different parts of the business and really made myself an expert in life sciences. And then ironically, you know, 11 years at Merck, I hear that Microsoft is looking for people who know industry. And I thought, wow, this is a perfect mix of my skill set, you know, technical and industry focused. And that's what I came in here to do, was to really build out the ecosystem from a partner perspective for life sciences. That role then expanded to be the director of life sciences and building the strategy for the pharma accounts. And that eventually moved on to another role where I was looking at healthcare all up across all those verticals. I've always been focused on the healthcare industry, a lot of attention to partners in and out of partner roles within that time. And really, I'm really proud of the work that we've done to move this vertical to a whole new level as far as integrated with Microsoft. I remember when I first would be at shows, industry shows, people would say, why is Microsoft here? Now I have people coming up and saying, can we get in line for this? Can we take a demo? Can we take a walk through or see a demo of this product or solution? So really excited about that progress.
You know, you seem excited about, and it seems like you have a lot of fun in what you do. Is there one most fun aspect of the job for you?
I do love working with partners. I will say that. And the reason why is, number one, you build a great rapport when you're an advisor from that standpoint, from a partner standpoint, being inside Microsoft. But one of the key things for me is I learned so much because I love to see how each of those companies run, how they got started. And, you know, where else do you get to do that for hundreds of companies and take that insight and learn like that and then move forward and incorporate that into your life? And in many of these partners still to this day, who I've moved on from those roles, they call me as a trusted advisor and ask for my input and things. So really being able to look at partners across the whole ecosystem, across the nation, and learn from each one of them has really been, you know, really a part of the job that I love today.
Was there one best piece of advice that you got when you first started either in business or when you started, in fact, at Microsoft?
I think the best piece of advice from my standpoint, and it sounds so simple, but for me, it was be yourself. Coming from the background that I did, you know, I was always like, am I technical enough? You know, am I strong enough from an industry perspective? And what I learned is the more confident I became in just who I was and what I had today, the better my output was.
And you have an interesting background as well from a personal perspective, right? Your family is immigrants and came over from Ireland. Can you maybe spend a minute or two with our listeners on your personal journey?
Sure. So I was actually born in Belfast, Northern Ireland. My parents brought me here as a child. I was the first person in my family to go to college. I was the first person in my family to even go to American schools. One of the funny things I joke about with my parents are I had an Irish brogue when I went to school and they wanted to put me in speech therapy. And I told my mom, they put me in for one session. I told my mom, why didn't you explain to them that it was an Irish accent? There was no one who was Irish in that area. And my mom was the typical immigrant. And she's like, well, I didn't want to upset anybody. And I didn't want, you know, so she let me go for one meeting. I met with the teacher and she's like, you don't have a problem. End of story. So that's one of my funny stories about, you know, being an immigrant as far as that goes. I was first to go to college. I'm the oldest of five girls. And I'm extremely passionate about technology and women, as well as healthcare. And really, I spend a lot of time on helping others grow. One of the things I do is I have my own personal blog. It's called The Working Queen Bee. And it's really about how I balance my work life, my personal life, as well as my passions for health, technology, and women, and making all of those things better. I tell the stories about, you know, how I balance all these things, because as everyone knows, it's not easy for any gender by any means, but in particular, I think for women.
What's a great piece of advice you could leave our listeners, those who are starting out in their career first? And I have some other questions as well along these lines on the Working Queen Bee blog, because we will have a link to it. But I would like you to share some of those nuggets, if you don't mind.
Sure. I think one of my favorite ones that I wrote for a Working Queen Bee around advice was one of my favorite ones about being a working mom I wrote was called never be afraid to leave work early. Because I, you know, you work in a company, I have a flexible schedule. And one of the key things were there was a ton of things going on at school. And I often felt if I was totally competent in my role and there would be a call like, hey, can you come in and help with this, be a lunch mom? And I would say no. And my son would beg me and say, will you be a lunch mom? Will you be, please just be a lunch mom one day. And trying to find that hour to be the lunch mom was tough, but I really did work out ways that I could, you know, make both of those roles successful and be the lunch mom one day. And my son was, you know, smile from ear to ear. And I would, so I use the title of never be afraid to leave early. Because if you have something at school, if you have a sporting event, those times are going to pass. Sometimes things at work are so important and you feel the pressure. But a lot of times what I'll do is I'll do them at night when the kids are in bed. I'll do it another time. But stop and think about what your priorities are. And where it kind of came 360 for me is I was on a panel and someone asked me about it. And I said, yeah, never be afraid to leave early. If you need to go do something with your kids or your family, or you need to do something for your health or your priority, make that a priority and do it. It makes you a better worker in the long run. And I was on a call at Microsoft and there was tons of people on the call. And at the end, someone spoke up. It was this woman, Maureen. And she said, oh, Andrea, you and I met before. I said, oh, we did. I didn't know that. She's like, yeah, I remember. You're the one who told us all to leave early.
I love it.
And I said, I don't know if I like being remembered as the person who said leave early, but the concept behind it, absolutely.
Yep. We called it the work-life balance, right? And then I had another guest recently, Katie Quigley, say a balanced life works, which sounds a lot like what you're discussing here. What about what about for those early in career and particularly women in technology, just getting started in the technology industry? What piece of advice would you have for them?
I would say build a board of advisors. I think before I came out of school, you know, people would say, get a mentor. Mentors are fabulous. However, it's kind of like dating. There's not a perfect match for every person. And the chance that you're going to meet them on the first, you know, get out the gate is very slim. So think of it more as a board of advisors, meaning that mentors or people who are currently in at the same stage as you and doing well. Mentors as in future roles that you may be looking for, future companies you want to work for, and talk to them. The other thing is also think about people who are outside your circle, either academics. Before I was previously like just focused on healthcare, so I was like, oh, I want to talk to healthcare people. You can learn from other industries, other groups, and what can you learn from them? But one of my biggest pieces of advice is always focus on the competency. People may not want to be a mentor and meet like once a month for an hour, half an hour. But if you focus on a competency, you can have a high quality conversation and get what you need out of it. And I'll give you a good example. If my competency that I wanted to develop was to be a keynote speaker, I would find the best keynote speaker I knew on Twitter. And I would contact him on Twitter. And I'd say, do you have 30 minutes? I'd love to talk to you about your skill set and how you got there. And hear their story. How did they become so good at it? And try and learn from that. And then come out with an action plan. So I think that board of advisors really focused around competencies that you want to develop is so very important. And think of it as a whole plan. Write it down. Write commitments to yourself. By the end of this year, I will do this.
That's really great advice. What about your role models? Were there any that you can point to either directly or indirectly? And what advice or attributes did you learn from them?
Sure, that's a good question. I think role models for me, I definitely was thinking about myself as an executive and how I develop. And a manager that I had also said, hey, a lot of people at this level are on boards and doing all these things from outside of the company to develop themselves and their networks and to give back at the same time. And I thought, that's crazy. I have these kids. I have no time on my hands. You know, I can't do that. And he was like, you absolutely can do it. And I remember thinking, do I? And I went through the work to apply to a board, got on a board, and I learned so much. I networked with great people. I learned so much. I raised over $70,000 for a great cause. And it really did develop me as an executive. And I thought back to that manager and I thought, if he didn't push me, I was so quick to say, I don't have the time. And the reality of it is I did. And it was a skill set I needed to learn. And it did help me grow better than anything I could have taken in a class. Or that's the right way to push somebody. right? Jesse just nudged a tiny bit and put it back on my lap, no pressure.
And how did you make the time?
That's a good question. Really set the expectations, right? Before I made the commitment, I learned how many meetings are there a year? What type of time commitment is it? There are tons of events. I said to them, how about I take one event and focus on one event? And that's what I did. A lot of those things you can do off hours. My kids get on the bus early. My kids are on the bus at 7:30, so I could do a meeting right after that. It really did work out. And then when I was looking for sponsors and people that I was working with, honestly, a lot of the connections within the company helped me to build out that network and those sponsorships. And I did a lot of it at night through email, through social media, meeting up with people in the evening after the kids were in bed. Once I built that network and that process down, I was able to rinse and repeat pretty easily each year.
Great. And is there a quote you live your life by or you think of often?
Yeah, I always think about, I talked about all the different roles. And I actually have this on my slide that I tell when I tell my story in one slide. I try to be in the moment, as simple as that sounds. But whether it's an executive at Microsoft, an advisor to the partner, a mother, a daughter, I try to be in the moment at the time that I'm doing that role and do that role 100% at that time by being in the moment. It sounds simple, but today's with social media, with the phones, with computer, it's very hard to be in the moment. So really be in the moment.
That's really great advice. Be in the moment. And, you know, you and I were talking about this before we started the podcast about just all the emails every day, the IMing, the messaging, the Twitter, everything that's going on in our lives. So are there any useful tools or things that you do specifically to stay in the moment or to not be distracted?
I love to be on social media, absolutely, and check things. But I try to do it at certain points. A good example is like Twitter. It fits two feeds for me. First thing in the morning when I'm having my coffee, I go through Twitter. For me, it's a great way for me to learn what's happening quickly and in small bites, right? What's the top news? What's the latest announcements in my industry? What are my customers talking about? I can hear all that quickly and I'll share it out and I can respond and think about what I'm going to do without the day. But then I can kind of put it away and say, all right, focus for the rest of the day.
I would consider you an influencer in social. Are there specific tools you use to automate your social?
I do use the paper story. I think that's the only one I use. I know we talked about some of the other tools I definitely want to start using. I think more what I've learned more is really around the hashtags and getting in communities. Because if I'm at an event and there's a hashtag and you hashtag everything, you learn the people who are there. The people who are there are there because their healthcare is important to them as well. So I look for the hashtags where people are having those discussions. And then I begin following those people and vice versa.
That's great advice. So let's talk about young Andrea. What advice would you give your, let's say, 25-year-old self?
Just be yourself. I think one of the key things I said were, you know, coming from this background where being raised by immigrant parents where you're kind of, you know, don't speak, you know, be quiet and don't speak up. I was kind of the opposite of that. I still am. And at the beginning, I was a little bit shy about that. I came into my own without a doubt. Anyone will tell you that.
I can't see you being shy.
No, but I mean, at the beginning, you know, you didn't. It's just the environment that I was brought up in, being the first to do so many things, to go to college, to be the first one to go to school in the U.S. was all new. Everything was all new. At the beginning, I was a little bit shy around those things, and I wish that I walked out with the same confidence that I had today. It definitely was a journey to get there, and I'm, you know, definitely there now.
So if you had a personal billboard, and this is somewhat of a metaphor, right? So would there be a saying or a slogan that you would share with others on that billboard?
I don't know. That's a good question. I think I keep thinking about I joke about my working queen bee all the time, because people always say, oh, it's called the working queen bee because it's the total irony of that the queen bee doesn't do any work. She has all the ants, I mean, all the bees who work for her.
Right.
But I'm the working queen bee. I do all the work.
Is that an oxymoron?
It is. So it's like how you balance all these things. So I definitely, the billboard would definitely have something about the working queen bee, the irony of the working queen bee. Or don't make yourself a working queen bee.
Don't make yourself a working queen. I love it. Maybe it could just be a big picture of a working queen bee. How's
that? That's right.
So let's talk about books. Is there one book you've read or gifted often that you'd recommend to our listeners?
Yes, definitely. I would have to say Sheryl Sandberg's Lean In. I was inspired by her because in my previous company, most people never even talked about their kids. And it would be considered, and it's sad, but it's true. It would be considered that you weren't dedicated to your job if you were talking about your kids and taking time off to do those type of things, quite honestly. And I come to Microsoft and every meeting, everyone's like, do you have kids? I'm like, what? Should I say I do? You know, so definitely completely different culture from that standpoint. But when I read Sheryl Sandberg's book, I was floored at how much she talked about she struggled with work-life balance. But she's a top executive and how she had some, at one point, one of the stories that really stuck out for me is she was leaving work at 5 o'clock to go and have dinner with her family because that was one of the things she made a priority. Mm. And she felt like she would have her admin check the hallways before she went because she felt like she had to slither out so no one could see her leaving on time because that would be frowned upon, right? She should be there to midnight or whatever it may be.
Right.
So it really struck a chord with me that someone that had a whole different lifestyle than me, that was this top executive, you know, really had some of the same thoughts that I did and even right down to, when she went to school, she went to Harvard. And when I think about, when we think about biases and how people by no ill intentions have biases, her father said to her, who ended up being one of her biggest supporters, I hope that you find a good husband at Harvard. I think to myself, that would not have been what my parents would have said to me. Really, really touched by her telling her story. And whether you agree with it or not agree with it, because it's very controversial, she opened the doors to have the conversation and has changed the way people look at women and work and managing that diversity at a different level. Yeah. Highly recommend the book. I could talk about it for hours with people. I had a book club on it. And it's definitely one of my favorites.
Well, we will make sure to provide the link to that in the show notes, along with other links that I'm hoping you're going to share with me about your business and healthcare and life sciences business at Microsoft. And then if our listeners are looking to get a hold of you, what's the best way to reach out?
I would say probably the best way is Twitter. I have my handle is @AndreaWork. You can always send me an email. It's andrea.mcgonigal@microsoft.com. I get thousands of emails, so sometimes it's hard to get through. Sometimes I find even, you know, for me reaching out to customers, much easier to get people on Twitter.
Yeah, I agree. But for the Andrea McGonigal, I'll spell it for our listeners. It's MC GONIGLE, andrea.mcgonigal@microsoft.com. And as we've discussed, the 300 emails a day, probably Twitter is the right approach, right?
Right.
So Andrea, this has been terrific. I want to thank you so much. This is a very, very busy time of year for you, and I really appreciate you making time for our listeners to educate everyone on healthcare, but also in particular to spend time with our listeners on your personal and professional journey. And we'll be looking for you on Working Queen Bee, and I'll look forward to seeing you in future events and in the industry. So thank you so much for joining.
Great. Vince, thank you for this opportunity. I was super excited to be a part of it. Had a great discussion today. I want to thank you because I'm so happy to see you doing this. You've been doing this as a mentor to me at Microsoft for many years, and you've been so helpful to develop others and help others learn. So I'm really happy to see you doing it in this format where you can share it at scale. So thank you for this, and thank you for including me.
Thank you so much, Andrea.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of The Ultimate Guide to Partnering with your host, Vince Minzione, online at ultimateguidetopartnering.com and facebook.com/ultimateguidetopartnering. We'll catch you next time on the Ultimate Guide to Partnering.